Hey guys, and welcome to the Moms and Murder podcast, a true crime podcast featuring myself, Mandy, and my friend, Melissa.
Aw, Hi, thank you, Melissa. That seemed genuine and sincere. I appreciate that.
It's been a long day. I don't have it in me to be snarky with you this evening.
So I will keep that in mind, and I'll let you know if you do.
We are so happy to be back. It's been a crazy whirlwind couple of weeks with the holidays and with our last episode having Josh Mankiewicz on, and we are really excited, at least I am, to just be back kind of in our regular groove and having a regular case that we're going to do just like normal for us.
And we love the Josh Mankiewicz episode.
Yes.
Well, we loved it, but we will never listen to it again because I get such extreme anxiety even thinking about that day.
Very hard on the nerves.
Yeah, very, very hard on the nerves. So I'll maybe never recover from that episode.
Maybe not. I don't know. Yeah. As long as I don't listen to it again, I think I can just put it behind me. And that's just a thing that we did now.
So. Yeah. It's a thing we did. It's a memory. Okay. But if you haven't listened to it, listen to it because it was a lot of, we got a lot of good feedback on it, which
we
was
did.
Nice. Yeah. So thank you guys. So we have our mugs to go to Addie, our winner from our Hardy Boys versus Dateline episode with Josh, and it's super cute. Can't wait to get it out for you. And we got that through our website, our Threadless site, momsandmurder.threadless.com. We have updated our logo to include the word podcast, guys, so you're no longer in a cult.
Yes.
Now we officially have the word podcast as part of the design, and it looks really great. So if you want to check that out, momsandmurder.threadless.com, we would appreciate that, and we are looking forward to this new episode. Mandy, hit me with it.
All right.
But don't hit me.
So today's story begins in a small, quiet town with a population of about 9,000, Grimes, Iowa. It was the early summer of 2014, and Angie Verhuell was in her mid-20s working as a school teacher. She was totally smitten with her fiancé of 8 months, Justin Michael, who was 30 years old and employed by Wells Fargo as an operations analyst. By all accounts, Justin was the kind of guy anyone would be glad to have in their life in really any way. He was many things to many people. He grew up loving the outdoors and had a thrill-seeking side that led to activities such as skydiving, which he convinced his new fiancée, Angie, to do with him despite her fear of heights. What a guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. What a girl. Yeah. I don't know many people who could convince me to jump out of a plane.
I've jumped out of a plane.
You have?
Yeah. I went skydiving whenever I turned 18.
That makes me really surprised.
What? I'm not scared of like those kind of things at all. Like regular life stuff I'm terrified of.
That makes no sense.
I know. I'm an anomaly.
So the couple was enamored with each other from the moment they met, and they became engaged in August of 2013, which was just 2 months after they had began dating. So that's a little fast, but sometimes that works out that way.
Yeah.
So a few months later, Angie would actually move in with Justin, and the two would begin planning their dream wedding, which they had decided would be on July 20th, 2014. And they were going to have the wedding on the beach in North Carolina where Justin's parents lived.
On Mother's Day weekend 2014, Justin's parents came to visit the couple in Grimes. It was about 2 months before the wedding date, and the save the date cards have gone out, the excitement was building, and they were super excited to have his mom with them. Justin's mother recalled how they had spent that Wednesday evening before Mother's Day just hanging out, making s'mores, and talking about Halloween costumes. Justin's father was actually away on business in Minneapolis that night, so his mother stayed alone in the guest bedroom at Justin and Angie's home. In the middle of the night, Justin's mother, Marie, was awakened by the sound of her bedroom door opening. At first, she thought it might have been Angie entering the room to get something out of the dresser, but she soon realized that the shadowy figure standing in the doorway pointing a red laser light at her was much larger than Angie or Justin, and she knew that there had to be an intruder in the home.
That's
worst case scenario. Like any game of life you play, somebody coming into your room in the middle of the night.
Well, it's terrifying. I just remember, even when I was younger, I still kind of do every now and then. It's very rare, but whenever you're having like a dream and you kind of feel like it might be like reality.
Yeah.
And I've had those dreams though where everything is black in my dream, but I can like sense that somebody is there with me in the room.
That's not normal.
It's normal. It's a recurring nightmare that I have. But this reminds me of that, except real life. You know, so I'm like terrified of that dream. So I cannot imagine
realizing someone is
in the house or someone is standing in the doorway that doesn't belong here, you know, and shining this laser light at me. And she did say that she thought that was strange. Of course, you have to remember it's 3 o'clock in the morning. So
yeah, you're disoriented completely.
Exactly. You're very groggy, out of it. You're not really thinking clear thoughts right. like you would normally. And so she didn't know what it was. She thought that it was a flashlight is what yeah. she said. She thought somebody was just like that. Angie was in the room with some kind of a strange flashlight looking yeah. for something.
We have bears at our house, as you know, and you're terrified of, and they'll knock things over in the middle of the night. And when I hear them in the middle of the night, my brain tells me they could break into the house. Like, your brain's just not really working at 3 o'clock in the morning. So you can make up a whole lot of scenarios, and Angie with a strange light makes a lot of sense at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I think honestly that the thought of somebody coming into your house in the middle of the night while you're sleeping is really legitimately one of my like most, I don't know, like it's terrifying.
Yeah. I have those kind of thoughts in the middle of the night. Like, somebody breaks in right now. What am I going to do?
Right. Well, that's why I always worry. I'm like, would I wake up? Would I, you know, yeah. would I be able to like realize what's going on yeah. quick enough to do anything about it? And so it kind of sounds like though that Marie, Justin's mother, was, she didn't really know what to do. She was yeah. just kind of paralyzed
with
fear.
Probably better.
Right. Honestly. Right. Because you have to think like if I get up and start making sudden movements, like that's not yeah. going to go well
either.
If they're
leaving me alone, I should just stay here.
Right. So across the hall, Angie was rustled from her sleep by the same sounds of someone opening her bedroom door. But being that it was 3 o'clock in the morning, she didn't fully wake up. The next thing that she remembers is hearing four loud pops, which startled her awake completely. And she looked around the room just in time to see a person running out of her bedroom. She was only able to see what she describes as a shadowy figure. No real features, of course, because it was dark. So she couldn't like say if it was a white person, a black person, you know, what color hair they had, eyes. Right. She couldn't give any features because it's a dark room. So you just don't see anything. And they were wearing all black. So she started to nudge Justin, started saying his name, trying to wake him up, just like anyone would do. Something startles you awake in the middle right. of the night like that. And he did not respond at all. So she immediately became panicked and just knew that the worst had happened. And she ended up turning on the light and I guess realized that her husband had been shot. And so, of course, you know, she screams and Marie hears the scream from across the hall. And right. at this point, Marie had already been aware that there was somebody in the house. Yeah. So at that point, even Marie was like, oh, my gosh, like something really bad has happened. Yeah. And, you know, we need to get the police here. So Angie ran from the room and dialed 911. In a Dateline interview that she gave, she recalled how difficult it was to physically hold the phone and dial 911 when you're in a panic,
yeah.
and that she had to try 3 times before she actually was able to get through. So I know kind of about that. I've never had like a really, you know, I've never had to dial 911 for like a situation like this.
Right.
But there was like one time I had to dial because my son at the time, he was 13 months old, but he like fell backwards and hit his head and
yeah.
kind of acted like he was going to start losing consciousness. And I was freaking out, of course. He was so small then, you know, and I really was really, really concerned. And that was kind of my same experience, trying to just dial 911. And it's like everything that can go wrong with a yeah. phone goes wrong yeah. at that time. Like, you
it's
know,
like taking all your focus and you still can't like.
Right.
Get your fingers to where they need
right.
to be.
Exactly. Yeah. Or then it's just like whatever, like, oh, you're out of the service area or something's wrong. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
it just and any other call you would make would just go through just fine, except right. when you're trying to do something like
except
that.
Except when you have an emergency.
Yeah, right. So at the same time that Angie was dialing 911, Justin's mom was also calling 911. And they played the 911 tapes in the Dateline. So something that I, you know, it's really hard not to judge because sometimes when you hear 911 calls, you want to make a split second judgment about
yeah.
what, how that person felt or didn't feel or if they're being appropriate, you
right.
know, are they upset enough or.
Based on how you think you would feel.
Exactly. Even though you don't know.
Right.
And like it's the middle of the night. I'm sure they're all very confused. Nobody knows what's going on here.
Right.
So the calls, to be honest, they did sound a little bit calm.
Oh, they were very calm. It was very matter of fact, but. It has to be shock, just total
It's just shock. And you're just trying to get the call in
yeah.
and get the help that you need and then figure it all out.
Right.
But it was very calm and just very someone came in and shot my fiance in the head and they wanted her to go check to see if he had any signs of life. And she just said, no, he's dead.
Yeah.
And so it was like that part of it. I was like, whoa, you
yeah.
know, not judging her like at all. But I was kind of taken aback by that myself. And I can see how to a detective that might look a little.
Yeah.
detached.
Right, right.
Is that the right word? Detached.
Yeah. Well, the mom too. I thought she sounded very.
Well, she was
detached.
Well, the way she said it, like someone came in and shot someone. That's what she said, and they were like, "Well, do you know who was shot?" And she was like, "Yeah, my son."
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, that's kind of you. It's kind of odd to me that you wouldn't lead in with that.
Yeah.
Like my son has been shot.
Yeah.
But like we said, we don't know how.
Exactly. But I think what I gathered from anything I saw with her, she was very calm and just kind of.
Just as a person.
As a person. Like her personality was not somebody that excited maybe ever. Like, she just didn't seem like she had that
in her. Some people are just that way.
Yeah. Officers arrived at the home to find a puzzling crime scene. They have many questions, including some practical ones, such as why would somebody come into this house, target one person to execute, and then just leave? Why didn't they kill Angie and Marie, especially since they, like, see that they're in the house?
Right.
There was no sign of robbery or forced entry. The only things out of place in the home were a DVD player pulled out in the living room, and a neon yellow sweatshirt was left on the floor in the same area. Investigators found all of these circumstances suspicious. And, yeah, it didn't make sense. Like, who goes into a house, shoots somebody, and leaves a sweatshirt?
Right.
Like,
and the
when
only,
did you take it off?
And the only thing that was disturbed was just... It was like a DVD player that was on the TV stand had just been pulled out and it was kind of like hanging on the floor, but the cords are still attached and everything. But that was literally the only thing that was out of place at all.
I could do that at night, like just randomly.
My kids do that several times a day. Like that would not be an abnormal thing at my house.
If anything happened in my house and they said like, here's all these disturbances that happened, I'd be like, I don't actually know who did that. It could be anyone in this house. So officers asked Angie and Marie to collect their things so they could be taken out of the house. And I remember hearing Angie saying, like crying and saying she couldn't see because she couldn't even go back inside to get her glasses. Like they just rushed them out. They watched as officers combed the scene and searched for the intruder who had just murdered an important person in their lives. Eventually, they took both women to the sheriff's office for interviews.
So they actually stayed there, though, for about 3 hours is what Marie said in her Dateline interview was that they stayed there at the house, I guess outside of the house, but they stayed there for hours waiting before they actually took them into the police station. And Marie had said that was the longest 3 hours of her life. I was surprised by that. I was like, dang, they couldn't get you guys more comfortable, you know?
Yeah.
That seems kind of torturous after what they have just been through. And,
well, and
you know,
he's not at the hospital or anything. Cause you know, that always is like a fishy area if somebody's going to the hospital and they bring them quickly. But normally it seems like you hear about them quickly going to the sheriff's office. Like you'd think they'd want to take them out of that situation.
Right. Looking for a last minute holiday gift? Need your personal gift that's easy to create and even easier on your bank account? Then check out our friends at createphotocalendars.com. createphotocalendars.com offers the perfect solution with their high quality personalized calendars.
In just minutes, you can create beautiful calendars using photos from your computer, your phone, or your Instagram account. They have a variety of page layouts and background designs to make your calendar unique.
You can add birthdays and personal events, which the website will save, to make it easier to purchase a calendar every year. The best part is that most orders print and ship within 48 hours.
To create your own calendar, visit www.createphotocalendars.com and use the exclusive code PODCAST at checkout to get up to 55% off.
30 minutes after the murder of Justin Michael, an off-duty police officer came upon a traffic incident about 5.5 miles from the crime scene. A car had gone off the road and into a ditch, appearing to have missed a sharp curve. The officer was then approached by a man who knocked on his window, and this man was acting strangely. He was out of breath. He was acting nervous, just acting really odd, but otherwise didn't appear to be doing anything wrong, just that he was acting strange. He told the officer that he had had an accident and needed a ride, but the off-duty officer was not comfortable with that, and he called for backup. So he actually called, like, the dispatch and got an on-duty police officer for that area to come out and to help this guy. So I feel like that really says a lot about your demeanor if a police officer is like, I'm not giving you a ride anywhere.
No way. Not you.
So the man who was turned out his name was David Moffat, was eventually sent on his way in a taxi despite his odd behavior, and his wrecked vehicle was impounded by the police. So this is an important thing to keep in mind as we move forward on the story. Back at the sheriff's office, Angie was being questioned by investigators trying to piece together what had happened. At some point, it became clear that the police were suspicious of Angie and the story that she was telling. So it's just kind of one of those, if you watch the interviews, which they did play, like clips of, or, you know, it kind of goes, I feel like you see this a lot where it's like at some point the person realizes that they're a suspect.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, and I can't imagine after what had just happened with her, that would be the, I feel like that would just be the most devastating experience to have to like realize like, oh, they think I have something to do with this.
Yeah.
You know, and especially if you don't.
Yeah, then that's what I was going to say. Especially like she knows that somebody came in. So why on earth would they think that she had anything to do with it?
Right. The on-call detective that morning found it strange that Angie would have been laying just inches away from her fiance as he was shot. Yet she had not one single mark on her, not even blood spatter. They began asking her questions about whether she and Justin had ever used or sold drugs, whether they had possibly maybe whether she was seeing another man on the side. And, you know, maybe that would have given some insight or a motive for why she would want Justin dead. And they just kind of came up with a lot of wild ideas that they questioned her about and to try to get to the bottom of it. So they actually started asking her a lot of questions about her past relationships. They wanted to know who she dated before Justin and how long those relationships were, what the extent of them was. So Angie told detectives that she had been married before and divorced, but that there was the end of that relationship was amicable. There was nothing, you know, nothing to it. They didn't have any kids. They didn't own property together. They didn't have anything that would make it like a messy situation. So they ended their marriage on what I guess you would call good terms, as good as you can whenever you're getting divorced. So she then goes on to tell the detectives about another man that she dated right before Justin, and his name was Andy Wegener.
Angie had gotten pretty serious with Andy, and they had lived together for about 3 years, and she continued to live with him, even after they had broken up, which, no thanks.
I don't know how you could do that. I guess, what, do you just move to, like, the spare bedroom, and you're just hanging out there? I
mean, hey, pal.
I know it's hard because moving is expensive and it's hard to like just pack up your life and move on a whim, especially if you've lived there for 3 years. Like it's, you have your whole life there in that house.
Well, and they're probably renting, which means you could both be on that lease and you don't want anybody to screw that up. That just seems really awkward. No fun. No bueno.
No.
But she said the relationship was also well in the past by the time she met Justin. She began telling detectives about some strange instances that had recently occurred, such as her vehicle being vandalized with windows busted out while it was parked in front of Justin's house in November of 2013, and also that someone had come to Justin's backyard and destroyed some fruit trees that he was growing back there. The detective interviewing Angie thought this was a red flag and that it didn't add up. He felt that this was very personal and began to press Angie for more information.
So the thing about the fruit trees, I thought was an odd thing to vandalize.
Right.
Like, where would you get that idea from?
I guess.
To just go and, like, cut the branches. Angie said that they cut the branches off the trees, and eventually that ended up making them die because, of course, plants need their leaves and their branches and stuff to collect all their things they collect.
And stuff. All of the things. Oh, dear God.
You know, the sunlight and the whatever else.
Nope, that's not helping.
I don't know a whole lot about fruit trees.
What? No, you don't? Based on this description?
Actually, just kidding. I do have like some fruit trees, but I don't really do much with them. They kind of just sustain themselves. But
I'm going to go vandalize them.
Please don't. So as they were continuing to talk to Angie more about her past relationships and try to get more information, she had told them that there really was not very many men that she'd had in her life. Well, I wasn't surprised by that because she was only in her mid-20s. So how many relationships can you have had by that point? So they continued to press Angie for information about her past relationships, which she said there were very few of. But about 3 hours into the interview, she suddenly recalled that there was another person that she had briefly dated in between Andy and Justin. And his name was Dave. But she claimed to not be able to remember this person's last name. So I mean, I guess I don't know how long ago at this point that it was that she had been with Dave, but she couldn't remember his last name. Well, the officer that was interviewing her didn't really think that was a likely story, I guess.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay, yeah, sure. You know, and she was kind of even watching the interview tapes of her trying to remember Dave's last name, yeah. it kind of did feel like a little bit fake to me. Yeah, like, yeah. I was like, okay.
Like, Dave is a very generic name, you know.
Right, and oh, okay, now you don't know his last name, like.
But truth be told, under pressure, I couldn't remember my own last name, so.
No.
To me, I was I get it.
I know. So she told the detective that she had begun seeing Dave the weekend after she and Andy broke up, but that it was never really a serious thing. She had met him at a bar and they mostly had a texting relationship. You know, they didn't even talk on the phone, which no one does anymore. So that's nothing serious. But it was just really casual. She said they might hang out once a week or so. They would usually just go meet up at a bar somewhere and just like have a fun night or, you know, whatever. And then they would just text a little bit throughout the week. But it was not like a serious.
It wasn't a relationship.
It was not a relationship, no. But then when she met Justin, she started to avoid Dave. And after her second date with Justin, she really realized that she liked Justin a lot and that she wanted to pursue that relationship instead of this Dave relationship.
Yeah.
So she was kind of concerned about how she was going to break this news to Dave. And she asked her friends, you know, what should I do? Should I go meet him in person and do this? Or should I send him a breakup text? You know, how should I do it? And her friends encouraged her to just do this through texting because that's been their entire relationship anyway. So, you know, why?
That's new.
Right. So just there's no reason to go into this big, let's go out to dinner and I can break the news that I.
Well, it wasn't a real relationship. It was just kind of a, like they both needed somebody to hang out with and talk to.
So that, so a text I think was appropriate. So she was really kind about it and told him that, you know, in the interest of being upfront with him, and she didn't want to lie to him, that she had met somebody else that she really wanted to spend her time with. So he did not take that very well.
Right.
He sent her a few really nasty messages. She says that he called her names and said mean things about her as a person, and he just wouldn't really take no for an answer. And so eventually she just kind of stopped responding because, you know how it is.
Sometimes ghosting. She ghosted.
She ghosted. Sometimes you just have to do that though, because there's some people who just won't quit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you'll, and it's never going to be a productive conversation.
Some people look for a fight, so there's nothing you can do.
So then the very next day, he sent her another text message, and he was saying that he didn't feel the relationship was over, and he wanted another chance. And, you know, on one hand, it's like, I kind of feel bad for the guy. If he really was into her, I can kind of see how he's like, you know, the next day is like, but you can't really do that after you, like, the previous day just called someone terrible names.
You know,
like, you can't then be like, actually, I'm sorry, you know, like, I want to, I really like you and I want another chance.
Like, this is going to go real well.
Right.
Pretend I didn't do any of that. No, thanks.
So Angie did not respond to that message on the next day. And she says that she never spoke to him again after that and that he never tried to contact her again. She never saw him again or spoke to him again. And then, of course, she went on to pursue this relationship with Justin, which was successful and they got engaged. And
it was very escalated. It went, moved very, very quickly.
Right. Well, they got it. They were engaged 2 months after they met. So, yeah. So there wasn't really a lot of time, you know, there in between. So detectives were really invested in finding out just who this Dave guy was. And they started really focusing on getting his last name out of Angie and trying to help her remember and so that they could find him and at least talk to him or, you know, check him out, do a background, whatever. So after about 30 minutes of questioning just about Dave, Angie finally pipes up and says, oh, yeah, I remember Dave's last name now. It's Dave Moffitt.
Dave Moffitt was an accountant and the son of a wealthy Iowan farm family. Angie told detectives that one strange coincidence about Dave was that he had gotten a job at the same Wells Fargo branch where Justin worked a few months prior and that they worked in the same cubicle.
What are the odds of that?
Yeah, that's creepy.
Yeah, it is weird. And even like Marie, you know, and Justin's dad too, they were saying the odds are not really high that you would get a job not only in the same branch but working. I mean, it was like a big, a large building. And so to get to work that closely together with as many people in the town, like they just, it's not very, it wouldn't be a common thing to have happen.
So while detectives worked to find information on Dave, they ran a background check on him to find out whether he had a weapons permit. When another officer saw the name, they told investigators on the case about the car accident that had happened shortly after the murder and that the vehicle impounded belonged to a man named
David Moffitt. What are the odds?
Yeah, lots of coincidence. I do. I'm like, shut up, Boston. Shut up. This piqued their interest in a big way, and they had a strong suspicion that the murder and the accident were connected. A team of searchers returned to the site of the accident to look for anything that may be evidence in the murder, and they found some incriminating but very confusing pieces of evidence.
They did. Near the crash site, they found two magazines of ammunition matching the brand that was used in the murder of Justin Michael, and they also located some paper shooting targets, some shooting like ear protection, earmuffs, and they located a shoebox that had a Amazon Kindle inside of it. And there was also a receipt that was made out to Andrew Wegener, which was Angie's other former boyfriend. Right. So the receipt was from a local car dealership for the purchase of 3 oil changes. And this is all in Andrew's name. And this is all so confusing to me. And like my main question too, that I really want an answer to is, who buys 3 oil changes at the same time? That has really bugged me since I heard about that part. I'm like, well, does he have 3 cars? Did he just like prepay in advance for like a bunch of oil changes?
Prepaid. Oh, to live that life of prepaid.
I know that's not what's important here, but I mean,
but it
who
is really
buys
strange.
3 oil changes at at one time? I just thought that was not important. But
interesting.
But interesting. So, but the question remained, how were Dave and Andy connected to each other, and how were either one of them connected to the murder, or were they, or is this all just a big weird coincidence, or what's going on here? So this was all, of course, really confusing to detectives, and they kind of went down like a rabbit hole of trying to figure out, you know, is this like a conspiracy? Was there Andy and Dave teaming up to get some kind of revenge on Angie? Like, what's exactly going on?
Right.
So the detectives immediately went to Andrew's place of employment and they brought him in for questioning. And he had told them he had no hard feelings toward Angie whatsoever. He had only met Justin one time at like a party where they had like a lot of mutual friends. And he claimed that he had not really spoken to Angie beyond one time she had sent him a text message saying happy birthday.
Right.
So, but other than that, they were friendly with each other. It's not like they were had any ill will.
Well, they
or,
lived with each other for a long time.
And
after.
At this point, Andy Wegener is dating someone else. So he doesn't care about Angie and Justin. He has his own thing going on.
Right.
The detective began asking Andy about the receipt for the oil changes. And shockingly, none of the questions were, why did you get 3 of them?
Question number one, why did you do this?
And Andy actually believed, when they mentioned this receipt, Andy believed that he was in possession of the receipt. So the date on the receipt was actually in March. And at this point, it's in May. So that's actually a long time to keep track of a receipt. Although I guess if you prepaid, then you would have to.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So,
but, that makes sense.
You know, so he told them that he believed that the receipt for those oil changes that he had bought way back in March, which can you imagine? I would be so confused. Like, why are you asking me about something like that? That was months ago, you know, and how does that have anything to do with anything? So he told the detective that he thought he had the receipt either in his car or in his home or something. Well, then the detective started saying like, well, how would you explain it if I told you that that receipt turned up somewhere else? Yeah. And he was just, poor guy was so confused. He was like, well, I mean, like maybe like I threw it away. Like he was like, what are you talking about? You know? So that was, an interesting little interview to watch because you could tell he was genuinely confused and had no clue why he was even there.
Well, how terrifying if your life somehow depended on this one receipt.
Right. And you're like, well, I think I have it. I don't know. And you like don't know. You don't know what they're getting at. And so you're like, where are you?
Give me a little more information. I can really try and think about this. So police obtained a search warrant for David Moffitt's house. They recovered some strange notes, including detailed information about Justin and Angie's neighbors, such as when they were home, when they turned their lights off at night, which was the same type of weapon used in the murder. But it was made out, once again, to Andy Wegener, not David Moffitt, whose house they were actually in. So
this
what's going on?
Right. So this just gets more and more bizarre.
Yeah. It became a priority to find out who actually purchased that weapon, and they went straight to the source listed on the bill of sale. It was an English teacher and my personal hero named Drew Ballman.
He's the coolest guy.
Right? I know. Self-described nerd, avid target shooter, and metal detector enthusiast.
It's a thing.
Yeah. My sister and I were at the park the other day, and we saw somebody with a metal detector, and their shirt said, "Beach better have my money."
Oh, I love that.
I wanted to take a picture, but I was like, he'll clearly know what I'm doing here. He told detectives that he had sold the gun to fund the purchase of a new metal detector, which he said was like $600.
Right. And
oh, my husband used to have a metal detector.
And this was a Keith Morrison Dateline.
Yeah.
And Keith was very confused on why he would spend $600 on a metal detector. And then this lovely, lovely man, Drew, was like, oh, that's like the low end.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You can actually get some that are like thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
So he was... The 600 was a splurge for him, but he made it very clear that that was not the top end of metal detectors.
Exactly.
It's sunny and beautiful outside, which means I want to be out there. And while I can't just leave the house to vacay at a moment's notice, I sure can pretend. Welcome to the fabulous universe of June Parker's escapades in June's Journey. Forget about packing your bags. We're taking you on a roller coaster without a passport. Say goodbye to the mundane and get ready to dive into a whirlwind of drama and elegance with our leading lady, June Parker.
Whether you're itching for a juicy mystery or just desperate for a break from the daily grind, June's Journey is your ticket to excitement. Follow June as she unravels family secrets and tiptoes through the tangled mess of her sister's demise. It's like crashing a fancy party, minus the small talk about the weather. Although, we secretly love that too.
So dust off your virtual flapper dress and buckle up for a wild ride where every corner holds a clue and every twist keeps you on the edge of your seat. But hold on to your pearls. June's Journey isn't your average mobile game. I'm knee-deep in the fifth chapter, and trust me, it's more fun than a barrel of monkeys. With stunning scenery and catchy tunes, this game oozes sophistication and class. Don't waste another second. Jump into June's world and let the adventure begin.
Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Are you ready to revolutionize the way you enjoy food and essentials at home? Introducing Dash Pass from DoorDash, your ultimate ticket to convenience and savings. With Dash Pass, you gain exclusive access to unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders, along with members-only deals and discounts that will leave your wallet smiling. Whether you're craving the flavors of your favorite restaurants, need groceries from across town, or anything in between, Dash Pass ensures that everything you need is just a few clicks away, delivered right to your door. With Dash Pass, not only do you enjoy $0 delivery fees, but you'll also benefit from lower service fees on eligible orders, making it the most affordable way to satisfy your cravings and stock up on essentials from your local favorites. What I really love is how quickly Dash Pass pays for itself. On average, it takes just 2 orders, which makes it a no-brainer investment for your budget. And as if that weren't enough, Dash Pass grants you special access to exclusive promotions and menu items, adding an extra layer of excitement to your DoorDash experience. You get all this for only $9.99 a month, which is a small price to pay for unlimited convenience and savings. My family and I have had DoorDash for the past year or so, and while I make most meals at home, I don't know that I could mom without it. I used it twice just this past week while we were dealing with a stomach bug at home, and it was so nice to have and to be able to focus on getting better and not running all over town to pick everything up for everyone. Don't wait. Sign up for Dash Pass now and unlock a world of possibilities, all from the comfort of your home. Dash Pass from DoorDash, delivering joy, convenience, and savings straight to your doorstep.
Get more from delivery for less with Dash Pass. $0 delivery fees and reduced service fees on eligible DoorDash orders. Sign up for Dash Pass today and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change. Terms apply. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for Dash Pass today, only on DoorDash, and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
It was about a month after Drew had listed the gun for sale on armslist.com that he finally got an email from someone interested in purchasing it for the price of $360. Drew responded that he would need a photo ID and a cash payment because Drew is awesome.
Right.
He was able to produce copies of the email exchanges to detectives on the case.
So the email inquiry had come from the email address andywegner47@gmail.com. And Drew was presented with a photo ID for Andrew Wegner when he sold the gun to the person he sold it to. And the transaction actually took place in the parking lot of the gas station where Drew, I guess, worked at.
Yeah.
Part-time little job there. So he just met who he thought was Andrew Wegner. That's who he was believed he was meeting. Met him there in the parking lot, just kind of did the deal out of the back of his trunk. And, you know, he said that the guy he sold the gun to, he seemed really friendly, really nice. And he just asked how to load the gun. And so Drew showed him and then he went on his way and everything was fine. And there was nothing abnormal about that whole transaction. And Drew was like a very much a Melissa with wanting everything to be done just down to the detail correctly.
That is not me. I'm a paranoid person. You're That's paranoid. The part about me.
I think if you were selling a gun, you would probably go to all these great lengths of making sure that every like I was dotted and T was crossed. Like you're definitely going to make sure.
Blood tests. It'd be a whole thing.
Right. So Drew kept all of the correspondence as well as the pictures that he had posted of the gun online. And he even wrote down the license plate number of the vehicle that Andy, air quotes, showed up in.
That's me.
Yeah. Just for funsies. Just write it all down.
Yeah.
So a few days later, Drew's boss notified him that a sheriff needed to speak to him right away. And Drew became immediately worried that he had done something wrong with the gun sale. Like he made some kind of mistake and something was not done legally. Right. And he was just sure that he was going to jail for selling a weapon illegally or incorrectly, which that would be you. You'd be panicking.
Yeah, I'd get panicked every time I got a phone call.
Right. So detectives informed him that they believe that the gun was used in a murder. And Drew was, he was in shock. They asked him if he had any of the shell casings from the gun that he had sold so that they could compare them to the ones found at the murder site as well as the ones they found at the crash site. And he did. He had a bunch. It was like close to 100 empty shell casings. He had the officers were even like, this is a person who keeps everything.
Yeah.
So they were a perfect match. And that was great. You know, it confirmed that that most likely was the murder weapon. But right. They still didn't know who bought it or right. how it got into the hands of the murderer who ended up at Justin Michael's house.
Detectives asked Drew if he thought he could identify the purchaser in a lineup, and they showed him two sets of six photos. In the first set, they included a photo of David Moffitt, and Drew said that he couldn't be sure, but he believed that was the man he sold the gun to. The second set of photos included Andrew Wegener. Drew picked him right out, but this time he said that Andy looked like the guy in the ID. So he recognized both men out of the 12 that he was shown, but David Moffitt was who he believed he met in person, and Andy was a person's ID that he was shown. This dude has a good memory, too, because...
Yeah. I would never... I would
forget your face as soon as you leave.
Right. I would be like, it could have been either one of them. Honestly, I don't know. They both look familiar, but I wouldn't be able to say, this was the ID, this was the real person. So No. Good
I'd
memory.
I'd say maybe on everything.
Right.
Maybe.
Although he obviously was the kind of person who paid attention to detail because...
Sure. Because he's Drew.
Right.
Detectives brought David in for questioning, but he requested a lawyer immediately and refused to talk. It didn't matter, though, because they had enough evidence to charge him in the murder without getting an interview. They showed Angie a photo of David Moffitt to ask if she knew who it was, and she confirmed that it was the same Dave she had mentioned earlier.
So at this point, they realize that they have... Yes. They've got him. They've got enough of a connection there where they can say, most likely this guy, you know...
Yeah.
...is the killer. So as detectives began executing search warrants on Dave Moffitt's home and building their case against him, they found a red storage tub containing a treasure trove of evidence. This was what they would call a gold mine for, detectives searching for this type of thing. So the shoebox that was from the crash site that they had found the Amazon Kindle and the receipt in, that didn't have... It didn't contain the shoes that the box was for,
right.
But in the inside of the red tub, there was a brand of shoes. The brand was Nevado. And so that was the same box, you know, the same type of box. Right. And so they found the shoes that probably came with that box, you know, inside this red tub. That was all confusing. Everything I just
said. I know.
So they also found in the bin some ammunition that matched the murder ammunition and a laptop at the very bottom of the bin. Well, there was also water in the bottom of the bin a few inches. So this laptop was submerged in water. Well, that's not suspicious, is it?
No.
I mean, why would you do that?
Of course.
So upon investigation of the laptop, because you know the police immediately took that out and let it dry off and sent it right to the lab.
Put it in a bucket of rice.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So after they were able to investigate and pull the information off that laptop, it was discovered that David had used it to make several very incriminating Google searches. And now I'm going to read you a few of David Moffitt's Google searches. By the way, guys, don't Google search things like this.
No. You need to write, like, Dear Mr. Google, this is just for research. I'm not actually doing this.
Right, exactly.
As, like, the first half of your sentence.
So the first one is, the best murdering guide you'll ever need.
Was that a book? I don't understand. Like, that's a very specific question. And
I don't even know. Okay. I mean, I guess if that's what you're looking for, then that's what you type in.
Is this a book? Yeah.
I don't know. Then the next one was How to Get Away with Murder.
Maybe he wanted to watch the show. Did anybody think of that?
The next one was Hiring a Hitman.
That is not a show.
Convicted crimes of passion in Polk County. So he wants to find out who else has been convicted for this. And I guess how much time they got. I don't know.
To find out who he's going to be bunkmates with. I don't understand.
I guess he wants to see how this all goes down after you get caught.
Yeah.
I don't know. So the next one was love triangle murder. What? So he's really invested in this.
I like
whole
that
thing.
He even uses like the cutesy terms for
love
it.
Triangle.
Crimes of passion.
Right.
Yeah.
So then he looked up traffic cameras and Grimes. So he's really starting to go deep now. He wants to see. He's really trying to plan his out and his alibi and everything. The next one, this one's really, really disturbing. He searched how thick is the human skull. And there was another one that I didn't write in my notes, but he had also searched. He wanted to know what fruits resembled the human skull the most.
What?
I don't know.
That's like pregnancy baby
All I
stuff,
could think
right?
is that he was trying to like do practice shots at this thing. That's the only reason I could think why you would search that. And that is just sickening. I don't even have anything else to say about that.
No.
So then the next one, and this is then when he starts coming to his senses, he searches St. Anthony confession times. So now he wants to know, you know, just go confess now and then don't do the murder.
When you're like this deep into your Google searches, like take a second, review your recently searched history before you go and kill somebody and say like your subconscious is trying to talk you out of this.
Right. And then finally, his last one, what does hell look like? He Google searched, what does hell look like?
Did he think there was going to be a map or like pictures somebody posted on Instagram? Like, I don't understand where you're going with that, bud.
He was concerned about it.
Are you worried about the location or the temperature? I don't get why that matters in this at all, if you think you're going there. But, oh my gosh, that...
It's just...
But it speaks so much to, like,
the premeditation,
absolutely, so much premeditation. This is not a crime of passion. Like, this is straight up first-degree murder.
Right, you're straight up searching and planning.
Yeah.
Planning it. And trying to see how much you can get away with, and it's just very odd.
I still think he was looking up the show on that one. I think that was about when it came out. So the defense in this case attempted to paint David Moffitt as mentally ill and had gone down a dark spiral when he learned of Justin and Angie's engagement.
So because they worked in the same office, Justin and Dave, and in the same cubicle even, apparently whenever this news broke that Justin was engaged and everyone in the office is congratulating him and, you know, everyone is so excited and happy for him. And there's just this happiness in the office and this buzz going on. And then whenever it finally got around to Dave that Justin was actually engaged to Angie, supposedly he just went crazy in love and lost his mind. And
crime of passion.
Well, at that moment, it would have been a crime of passion, but then he waited.
Yeah.
So now it's no longer a crime. Now you've had time to think about it and you should have made a different decision at that point.
So they claim that he didn't even know why he had done what he did. I have some ideas. The prosecution was having none of that and laid all the evidence out for a jury, proving that David had planned this murder down to the last detail and had even planned to frame someone else for it. David Moffitt was found guilty of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison without parole, which is the mandatory sentence for first-degree murder in Iowa.
I assume there's no death penalty there.
Must not be.
Lauren, we are sisters.
That's true.
And we host a celebrity-obsessed podcast called Pop Apologists.
We also love Taylor Swift. Chandler, how are you managing to cope while we await Taylor's new album?
Look, I want to be put into a medically induced coma and wake up on April 19th, but I'm not sure my insurance is going to cover it.
Join us on our pop culture podcast, Pop Apologists, where we will be dishing on all things celebrity news and deep diving every word and note of Taylor's new album.
Pop Apologists.
Pop Apologists.
So Angie, you guys know me. I like to go down, you know, rabbit holes, and I like to go sleuthing on the internet and finding people, which sounds really creepy, but I promise I don't do anything weird. So I did kind of try and find Angie and see if I could see where she was now. And
we just want people to be happy.
That's really what I want. I just want to go and see, like, do they have a profile? Do they look happy? Do they seem like,
will they be my friend? Can I?
Right. So I did find Angie, and it looks like she was just married in the summer of this year, 2017. And she looks like she's really happy from what I can tell from her account. So of course she has, you know, I found her new husband's name and everything, which I'm not going to share here. But they did seem like they were really happy. And so that made me happy. Like you said, I mean, it doesn't replace the person that she lost. And You know, I hope that she is still in touch with his family to some degree a little bit.
Although that has to be so painful.
It does. I know.
That's just like a constant reminder, I would think. I'm like, shut that door. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, yeah, but except.
I get it. She remembers.
But if it wasn't for the fact that his mom was also there that night, then maybe I would be a little easier to be like, I'm just going to close that book now.
Yeah.
But I feel like I personally would feel like I had a duty to like stay in her life.
Yeah.
On some level.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying she has to like be grandma to her children or anything, but I would think that it would be nice to like at least meet up with her and have, you know, lunch or whatever.
Well, the interesting thing about the mom on this is she's, like I said, very straightforward, just very non-emotional, really. Like you would kind of expect someone to be. And so what I loved is at the end of the dateline, they, for lack of a better word, really humanized her. And she was able to tell the story of Justin whenever he was growing up and how he went up on the roof and he would take his little G.I. Joe men and put them down, like at 3 years old, put them down the chimney of his neighbor's house. Yeah, like parachute them. At 3 years old, on the top of a roof.
Well, that's why I'm making the face I'm making.
Yeah.
Because why is a three-year-old on the roof?
Well, because three-year-olds are crazy, man. We have four-year-olds, and they're insane. But yeah, I just loved, like, you could see her face light up whenever she talked about that. And you just have to think of how painful this has been. And there has to be survivor's guilt with this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even though, obviously, he was the target, if they had done anything really too much, he could have taken them out as well. But like, what was his point? Like, she'll be so traumatized, she'll go back to him. I didn't really like, or he just wanted to hurt her.
I think it's just anger and just, you know, just so much jealousy and just so much anger built up that he, you know, wasn't afforded this opportunity to be in her life like that. And I think it's just a case of a person who's insane, like wanting to
but
do
not
something.
Actually insane because
not
this
actually
guy
insane.
Planned this.
No, he did. But
one thing we didn't
you have touch- some level of insanity though.
Yeah. One thing we didn't touch on was that sweatshirt that they found in the house. And that did you get this part? Did you see this? That he actually it was the boat registration. There was a boat registration in the pocket of that for a sex offender that was in the neighborhood's son. So he was just like trying to
throw in all these
everybody, like just throw everybody in on that. And I thought that was just great. Like, how is he getting that? I mean, obviously he broke in and took it, but it was just like that sweatshirt made no sense. And then you see like, oh, and why would you have a registration of a boat in it? But he just was so methodical. And I love more than anything in this, my hero in this story would be that one police officer that was like, I don't like this wreck thing and put it all together.
Right.
Just like really got the ball rolling, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I the officers in that were on the dateline, the way they described it too, like it was really, I can imagine that. I mean, these are police officers and they're sitting here saying like that they were like kind of nervous about this guy that, you know, even though he wasn't really doing anything wrong. And, you know, the one officer said he already had patted him down and knew that he wasn't armed or anything, but he still wasn't comfortable, like, you know, transporting him anywhere or doing anything like that. So I don't know. I can't imagine that being the case. Like I said, if a police officer doesn't want to be around you alone, you know, something's wrong with you.
You're creeping somebody out. So.
So that was our episode on Justin Michael. We hope you guys enjoyed it. And we don't have any on my datelines this week. We didn't really push it.
Not when we had the like host from Dateline
right.
on last week.
How are you going to top that?
Yeah, so we can't.
So we'll be back at on my Datelines next week. If you guys want to send them to us, you can email them momsandmurder@gmail.com or, of course, if you want to join our lovely Facebook group, Mums the Word. We've got a lot going on in there right now, especially with our Christmas family we have. Mm-hmm. We had already named one Christmas family and it was super, super successful. Everything on her list was purchased. We chose a second name. And we are really excited about that. So we're going to have a second family in there. If you want to have an opportunity to get to help a family get some gifts for Christmas, then you should join us in our group and come to see what we're all about in there.
Yeah, it's just gifts of chickens and
all
kinds of stuff all the time. So have a great week, and we will be back with you guys next week.
Bye.
Hey, my name is Paul, and I'm not an animal expert.
I'm Donna, and I'm not an animal expert either.
And together we do a podcast about animals called Varmints.
Every week we pick an animal, do a bunch of research on it, and bring you some interesting facts about that animal.
But we don't stop there. We talk about that animal in movies, TV, and other pop culture.
And we talk about whether or not that animal would make a tasty dish and how intelligent we think it is on the scale of 1 to 10.
It's exactly like one of those fancy PBS nature documentaries.
Except with more poo jokes.
New episodes go live every Thursday wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Or you can visit us at blazingcariboustudios.com.
Varmints! Varmints!
Hi guys! You're listening to the Mums and Murder podcast, and we're from the Young Free and Coupled podcast. My name's Shamika.
And my name is Issa, and we're a young British couple. We talk about social issues. We have lots of fun. We discuss parenthood, marriage, our relationship, how we homeschool kids.
Issa, why do you keep on leaving stuff hanging around?
What's wrong?
I just bumped my toe on your hammer.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll put it away next time.
I'll put it away next time. That's what you always say, and I always end up hurting myself. Gosh!
What do you want me to do? It's happened already.
What do I want you to do? Do you realise that this is a Mums and Murders podcast? I am a mum. You better mind up.
Okay, well, why don't you just be careful, because you're waving it in my face and you're going to hit me.
If I wanted to hit you, I would do this. Issa? Issa? Guys, I really need to go. Don't forget, we're the Young Free and Coupled podcast. You can check us out on Apple Podcasts and any other podcasting apps. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the Moms and Murder podcast. Make sure to check back with us next week for a new episode. You can also find us at momsandmurder.com, where you can connect with us via social media. Please make sure you subscribe and give us 5 stars, because giving us 4 stars would be a crime. Thanks so much.